I wanted to be a stay-at-home mother for my children, so I had looked into the dairy goats. And when we got here, I got two little goats, and we started milking, and I made the cheese in the kitchen. The children and I had a great time. We had the garden right here. And then one thing led to another, and people kept coming down the driveway wanting the goat milk.
When it comes to dairy products, cows really have the market cornered. But there's one smaller animal who's way up there in the ranking, the goat. And not only do they produce delicious milks and cheeses, they really know how to make us smile. I came from the mud, there's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree, there's roots where I stand. I'm David Zelsky, and this is the Fork in the Road podcast, presented by Georgia Grown and the fine folks at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Each episode, we feature stories from Georgia's farmers, fishermen, merchants, artisans, chefs, and others who help provide Georgia-grown products to folks in the Peach State and beyond. I'm traveling through Georgia to tour some farms with celebrated chef Dwayne Nutter. Chef Nutter was formerly head chef of the critically acclaimed One Flew South, located in Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson Airport. He's been honored multiple times by the James Beard Foundation, the culinary arts nonprofit organization which recognizes the finest chefs, restaurateurs, authors, and journalists with the annual James Beard Awards, aka the Oscars of the food world. Most recently, he was a 2024 semifinalist for Best Chef of the Southeast. Now, Chef Nutter has returned to Atlanta to open a second location for his Mobile, Alabama-based restaurant, Southern National.
So you're in Mobile 5 years. What brought you back here, Chef?
It was time to come home.
I took a trip through the Peach State with Dwayne so he could reunite with some local farmers, meet some new ones, and make connections for this new phase of his culinary journey.
I was in the city before I left. I was at a restaurant called One Flew South in the airport. And there I used to smuggle cheeses and farmers market items in the airport to sell from my local portion of the menu. And it's been about 6 or 7 years, and now I'm back. And I'm checking out some of the farms that I used to buy from at the market. Now I'm actually boots on the ground. So watching the whole process and everything.
Gotta be neat. You know, I'm sure some things are the same, but some have changed since you left. Tell me about some of these farms that you're finding out there and the variety that the state has to offer.
Yeah, the state has a huge variety. It's probably Georgia has that climate with that growing region, and more and more people are starting to develop products for myself and regular people that want to just go buy some stuff that's local and good and different from the grocery store shelves.
For this stop on Chef Nutter's farm journey, we are just south of Atlanta and in between I-75 and I-675 in the small community of Conley, Georgia. This is where we'll find Decimal Place Farm, an award-winning 40-acre goat farm providing delicious milks and cheeses for their community and beyond. Mary Hart Rigdon is the owner.
I love being outside. I love utilizing this land and walking through it every day. So that's a big part of it as well, is I love being outside.
Mary gave me a rundown of Decimal Place Farm's history.
This is Decimal Place Goat Dairy Farm. We've been here since October of 95. Decimal Place started when I was living in Grant Park on a tenth of an acre, and my husband and I decided that we could try and live on a farm. I wanted to be a stay-at-home mother for my children, so I had looked into the dairy goats, and when we got here I got two little goats and we started milking, and I made the cheese in the kitchen. The children and I had a great time. We had the garden right here, and then one thing led to another, and people kept coming down the driveway wanting the goat milk. So I told my husband, I thought that as an unadvertised, people kept coming down the driveway and I had to tell them, I'm not a dairy, this is just for my family. And so we went ahead and I talked to a friend of mine who built the building for me, and we've kept on going ever since, so that in 2008 we became a legal grade A dairy, and we've been at farmers markets and been supported by local chefs like Chef Nutter for the last, I guess, 15 years.
Decimal Place Farm's small size means daily operations are more manageable than if they were larger scale.
This is a small operation. I like to be able to trim the feet properly, have time to shave the udders, have time to go out and graze with the animals, because there's all kinds of other things that happen that day to day, there's those kinds of things that you have to make sure that you've got enough culture to make your cheeses, enough rennet, because it comes from further away and it has to be shipped at a certain time. They only ship Monday through Wednesday, so you have to make sure that you have the product that you need.
When Chef Nutter first began working with Mary at Decimal Place Farm, its close proximity to his previous restaurant inside the Atlanta airport was convenient and beneficial.
It's hard to believe that you're like 7 miles from the airport and you just take two or three turns and it's all this Atlanta traffic chaos. And then you're tucked away back here on these 40 acres in the middle of a neighborhood that's just carved out just for her. It's freaking awesome.
And what, you know, I hear the regular farm noises. I hear the goats, I hear the chickens, but I also hear the planes. Tell me about where we are.
We're 7 miles from Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, and I felt very fortunate when I found this place. It was 12 and a half acres with some extra land around it, and I've been able to purchase enough to get us to 40 acres so that we rotationally graze that 40 acres, and approximately 70% of the diet of the animals comes from the rotational grazing on our organic pastures.
But the main selling point for Chef, Decimal Place Farm's high-quality cheese.
She does some good work with the cheese. What are you looking for when you're trying these cheeses?
I'm looking for, not sounding too weird, like a sense of place. A lot of regions, cheeses could be the same recipe, but because of the grass that they chose, or the feed that they chose, the way they treat the animals, the flavor's a little different. The terroir is different. You get the taste of the land. So it's a different grassiness, a different kind of sweetness. You know, mildly molassesy there. A lot of the citrus notes are a little higher. So it's just that region. And it's why we do what we do, because we're picking that stuff for that region. Or even if you want to buy something from Maine, because we got the airport and you like the way it tastes, just have it flown in and mix it with your Georgia stuff and then create something. And that's why we're here.
For Mary, what started as a small family operation has grown into the lucrative farm you see today.
Because I started out very small and just for myself, I started with buttermilk from the grocery store as a bacteria to grow in the cheese. And then along the way, just the different tastes of, there's myriad of medium heat loving bacteria out there to make your cheeses with, and I stuck with the one that my husband liked the flavor of the most. And so over time it just grew, and watched how the cheese was making in the house, so that when I had the building built that was all contained, it just made everything so much easier, because I could walk out there and not have to worry about what I was going to make for dinner, interacting with the cheeses that I was going to make.
Controlling the quality of the cheese has a lot to do with watching the livestock's diet and making sure they get only the best nutrition. In other words, no tin cans for these goats.
How important is the diet when it comes to the taste, and how hard is that to control with something like a goat that will eat anything?
We walk the pastures with them and check out the woods to make sure that there's no cherry, no rhododendron that's come in with birds. But the poison ivy, the kudzu, and all of that is a part of the variety of their diet. In the fall, we have the acorns falling from either the pin oak or the white oak, and that gives us a much creamier cheese to make. So we make those few cheddars in the fall. But just being out in the pastures and keeping the barn clean gives a nice crisp taste to the cheese because everything is kept cleaner and fresher that way.
Anything in the cherry and apple family as far as the leaves break down to cyanic acid in the stomach? And then anything azalea or rhododendron is toxic. So we try and make sure as we walk with them on the graze to cross-check and see if there's birds that have planted a cherry tree.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have my my specialty activated charcoal in the cabinet just in case.
And did you know that goats are some of the most efficient livestock to care for?
More people around the world use goat milk and goat meat because of that efficiency. Here in the United States, we have price supports and all kinds of other things in the cow dairy business.
Mm-hmm.
This is a choice that I made because I believed in an animal that eats poison ivy, honeysuckle, privet, kudzu, and turns it into milk.
Yeah, it's, you're right, it's crazy efficient.
That, yeah.
I see what you mean.
Decimal Place Farm is home to a specific breed of goat, which originated more than 4,500 miles away in the valleys of Switzerland. Mary chose Saanen goats because of their peaceful temperament.
The Saanens originated in Switzerland. There's a Saan Valley in Switzerland, and they've been here since like 1901. And when my girlfriend introduced me to goats, she had some Nubians, which can call a little louder, and I knew when I moved to the neighborhood here that I didn't really want to disturb my neighbors. So to be a good neighbor, I've got peaceful, calm, quiet, and it's worked out very well for me.
Saanen goats may be known for their peaceful nature, but every once in a while, they do get territorial.
And fighting out of the red corner, wearing the solid...
They're deciding who's going to be in charge today, and it's... They have their little skirmishes, but that's... Most everybody settles themselves out.
This time of year, when it's a shorter season, they're starting to cycle, and it'll be breeding season soon. So some of that, they're working out who's going to be in charge for the day, who's going to lead the herd to where they're going to graze. And you've got the younger animals mixed in with the older animals as they go out to graze. So the older animals are trying to say, you know, stay in your place. So it works out that they won't keep the fighting up for too long. And then if I'm out with them pulling down branches, they're more interested in foraging and eating rather than fighting.
Besides closely monitoring their diet, these goats also require a regimented schedule.
We milk on schedule every morning. We milk at 8. Then they go out to the pasture, so it depends on which pasture they go to. We'll go out with them, depending on what cheese-making duties that I have to do. But they stay a little longer and graze a little better if I'm there to help pull down kudzu vines or honeysuckle. And they've pretty much, the close areas, they've gotten all the lower privet. So I go out with a set of choppers and cut down the tall privet so that they can enjoy that as well. But we're trying to utilize all of the land and to help keep the invasive species out and keep the good stuff growing. When we get to the winter, I go through the forest and throw out Austrian winter pea, and that, once the leaf litter falls, will grow in that leaf litter and give an extra bit of nutrients for them in the fall.
These goats need regular supervision for many reasons. One of the biggest of those is managing their general comfort.
Those days where it was 90 some degrees out there, they went out and just lie down. They were not interested in grazing. So it affected the amount of milk that I got for the animals, but I started putting fans in the barn at night and leaving the lights on so that those of the animals that really hadn't met their nutritional needs could have a little extra at night when those really hot days happen.
So we've heard a lot about these goats. I say, it's time we meet some. Let's start with the big guy, the father to all the goats at Decimal Place Farm, meet Nacho! 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 Yeah, his name's Nacho.
It may be obvious, but what's the role of Nacho?
Nacho is this season's dad for growing all the babies. I look at production records of the mothers of these animals, look at the structure of the animal himself and the mothers, so that we are looking for an animal that will be able to walk through the pastures for 10 years. My oldest animal is 12. And so that year after year, they've got the strength and sturdiness that'll keep them going on a pasture rotation system. This time of year, we keep the boy right here where he can tell us who's interested and who's not. Oh, okay. And otherwise, he's across the driveway. That way he has big open space where he can enjoy and hang out.
Hey, it's a living. So we've met the Decimal Place Farm's patriarch. Now, let's have a visit with some of his offspring. It's baby goat time, y'all.
Because we want a year-round milk supply, we have babies born almost year-round.
Yes. Future studs. I'm going to put you down in a minute.
These two happen to turn out to be boys, but they'll be future herd sires at another farm. Easy there, boy.
Almost there.
Don't chew the mic. There you go.
So tell me what's going on here.
So we're putting these out in a small pen so they can stretch their legs, get used to nibbling on things, but still be safe. They're under the tree, so they're in the shade.
Away from the Atlanta Hawks.
And this way we can also move the pen around a little bit to give them a little bit better. But see, they're nibbling already. They come out here whenever the weather's going to be good.
These particular goats are boys, meaning they don't produce milk. But they do have other jobs.
The boys either become a junior herd sire, or they go to be 4-H pets. That way the young children learn how to raise an animal and be responsible with it. And they're good for all these grazing projects that have cropped up, whether it's California or here in the Atlanta area. You'll see goats being used as brush control. I believe there's a group out at the airport that takes care of stuff.
Oh, wow.
I asked Mary when these babies will be ready to join the rest of the herd.
They'll join the herd when they get to be about 6 months old. I'm looking for size so that they don't get out there and get hurt or slip and fall into the creek and can't get out by themselves. Because with 40 acres, there are different places where if a tree is disintegrated, then it's disintegrated down into the roots as well. And I found one poor goat that had fallen down into one of those holes and she couldn't get out because it was such a tight squeeze. So I had to reach down and lift her out of that hole. But I could hear her calling to me, and because they're so peaceful and quiet, and I chose the son and breed because they were peaceful and quiet, and being a mom of small children, I wanted to make sure that the goats and the children wouldn't harm each other. And so this has been a very nice mix for me. So the peacefulness, if they're calling, I go and see what the trouble is.
Now that we've gotten a chance to meet the goats that make all this possible, it's time to get a look at how the cheese is made.
Would you like to go and see the cheese making?
Of course. It's cheese time. So what kinds of cheese do you make here?
We make a
besides
feta cheese.
Goat cheese.
A creamy goat cheese, which is called the Chèvre.
Uh-huh.
A mozzarella-style goat cheese called Tuma.
Okay.
And then in the fall, when they have more of a butterfat content, I make a cheddar.
Like all cheese making, the whole process starts with the milking.
The milk is coming through the line here, and then it goes down to a large pipe, which takes it to the receiver at the end of the run. Once a month, we do a sampling of each animal's milk and weigh that sample so that we know exactly who's giving how much. And those records stand nationally, but also it tells me how the animals are doing.
Okay.
goat milk is actually naturally homogenized. They're shorter chained fatty acids, and that's why for folks that have the allergies and sensitivities, it's easier for them to digest the goat milk.
How much will each goat produce?
Approximately a gallon a day, a little more in the spring, a little less as we go into fall.
They do this once a day?
Twice a day, every day.
Every day.
8 in the morning, and then 7:30 at night.
So how long's your normal work day?
What's that?
Mary's. No, that's... This isn't a work day. This is a lifestyle.
There you go.
And I truly enjoy it.
This is what I do.
But milking in the morning, I have time that if someone wants to go to lunch, if I go to your restaurant and have lunch, I can go to a matinee movie-wise. And so I set my life around the morning milking, the evening milking.
After the milking is done, cultures are added to create a chemical reaction which forms the cheese curds.
I'm going to add a culture to it, and then the culture will sit and grow for an hour. And after that hour, then I'll add a lot of rennet, which is a coagulator, and it stops that reaction and seizes it.
Okay. Tell me what the culture is doing.
The culture, I'm gonna ask the hard question. What does the culture do? The culture comes through and changes the milk molecule so that it's ready when it
becomes cheese.
Yeah. We use the same medium heat-loving culture for each of these cheeses. When I first started making cheese, I thought, brie would be fun. But the penicillin bacterium jumped from the brie cheese onto the creamy goat cheese, and people thought that I had a product that was going bad. They didn't realize that it was the bacteria transferring.
Right.
So I stopped all that nonsense, and we only use the one culture in the cheese room because it's a small room.
Right, you would need a different facility to do that. A whole nother room to keep the spores from.
That's right. And when you talk about, a bacteria, when I made cheese practicing in the house, the one day I forgot and had sauerkraut, I had little red dots all over my cheese. Because fermented products are fermented products.
Yeah.
Rennet is the name of the enzyme added, which causes the milk protein to coagulate into cheese formations. If the rennet doesn't get added, the result is another dairy product, which you know is buttermilk. In this case, goat buttermilk.
Sometimes when you get several pots started at once, sometimes things happen. This is milk that we put the culture in yesterday, but the rennet did not get added. So what we've got is a very beautiful buttermilk.
We'll
make some nice biscuits out of that.
Make nice biscuits. Make a mean ice cream too.
Something went wrong, but you can do something with it.
Right. The culture was added to it, but the rennet did not get added. The coagulator for this pot of milk did not get added. And so instead of being a cheese, it's just buttermilk.
Later on, Mary brought out a beautiful cheese plate so Chef Nutter could sample the wares.
This is the chèvre, the creamy goat cheese, and Chef can go ahead and get himself a scoop. Have it with his fig.
So smooth. A little grassy. Real subtle citrus notes. Gotta go hunt for them. A feta. I like this.
And then this one is the mozzarella.
Wow. That's really good. Oh man.
Yeah, it doesn't melt like a true mozzarella would because it's not pulled and stretched.
Right.
But
it's just kind of pressed.
Same flavor profile. And then this last is your cheddar. And so we made this December of 2021. We don't do a lot of this,
but since you're here today, get that out.
Don't make me blush. I say the main difference is it's a lighter cheese. Oh, I love the way it smells.
Cheddar, that's the rarity.
That's correct. That takes all day to make. By the time you start it first thing in the morning, I'm still working with it to put it in the final press at 9 o'clock at night after I finish the milking.
Yeah. Wow.
So each step in that process takes a little more and a little more. So that's the one we don't do quite as much.
Chef Nutter even got to try that buttermilk from earlier, and the taste alone gave him some culinary inspiration.
Not as heavy as a dairy buttermilk. And that citrusy flavor that comes with buttermilk is more pronounced. Voila, as they say. And find something to do with this.
Excellent.
And put in an order. A couple of gallons. Man, I wonder what it would taste like. And I told him, I said, what would it taste like in a pound cake?
Oh, yeah.
Decimal Place Farm's relationship to local chefs like Duane Nutter is the backbone of their work.
It's wonderful to share the farm with Chef Nutter, with the grade school children, to be able to show what on a small acreage can be done so that it is sustainable year-round. We have other inputs, but not very many. The grain that we get is an input from another place, but we try and keep as much as we can sustainable. It's really great to be able to show what we're doing so that folks have an understanding that they can't just call and say, I'd like this kind of cheese, and we have lots of it on hand. What we milk from Sunday through Wednesday goes to the restaurants, and then what we do on Thursday and Friday goes fresh to the farmer's market. And that we have 40 animals milking twice a day every day, and that's the amount of milk and cheese we have to make our products.
Chef's experience here on the farm was an educational one, and it's safe to say it's always good for a chef to become closer with their culinary community.
We're here.
The future is
security. Come on in.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good, just learning a little bit. And you're really tasting the land from which you're living. Same with fishing. Gulf fish taste different than Pacific and Atlantic Gulf. So it's just, you really get the taste where you live, for lack of a better word, is why I think it's important.
For Chef Nutter, food is a deeply personal experience. He brings that sentiment to his new restaurant, Atlanta's Southern National.
Well, I'm trying to just be myself, first and foremost. And I was raised in this area, this part of the country. And I want to highlight that with some of my own background, as well as showcasing the South on a global scale of foodways. And do a little artsy. A little down home, all mixed in the same melting pot, because that's what the South is. Big old melting pot. There's some regular folks, some artsy folks, some wild folks, some mellow folks. We're all down here. So that's what I'm trying to accomplish. So it's like a, you know, Southern, I would say, in feel, nice and homey. And, you know, national in flavor, because I've traveled all over the nation cooking. I lived in Seattle. I worked down in Mobile, I worked in Kentucky, I worked in Florida, cooked in LA, you know, so it's like all of my life's travel experiences coming out at my ripe old age of 48.
For more stories like this one, you can watch A Fork in the Road on GPB TV or anytime on the GPB.org website. That's where you'll also be able to listen to and subscribe to this podcast or download it on your favorite podcast platform. I'm David Zelsky. Thanks for listening to A Fork in the Road.